being taken over for Stephen by Stephen Elop. When Ansi announced his resignation, it was pretty inevitable that they would look to replace him as soon as possible. And, you know, gardening leave is a pretty common thing. And I think reading between the lines, that's probably what we're seeing here. But I do think it's quite notable that Stephen Elop has decided to take on this role while they're in the interim, while they're looking for someone to take it on permanently. I suspect it's a good way for him to sort of get educated about Nokia devices, which is, after all, you know, at the heart of what the company does. And you get a real feel for how things operate. I think it's quite a brave decision. He's certainly got a lot to learn going on as CEO, and to take over this mobile solutions role, it's certainly an interesting decision. But I suspect he'll be ably supported by Alberto Torres in the sort of Migo side of things, and Joe Harlow on the Symbian smartphone side of things. And it will give him that insight to Nokia that he may have been missing before. But to go back to your original question, I wouldn't really be concerned about this. You know, change is inevitable. And once you've changed out the CEO, so the subsequent changes to that are part and parcel of it. And rather than being a problem, I think I'd rather see them as an opportunity to sort of bring new people in.
And it's always worth pointing out that when you get up to that sort of level in a company, you feel kind of paternal about it. So, you know, certainly I think Ansi would think, you know, the best thing for Nokia is for me to step aside at this point in time. And while there's likely to be some, you know, personal, oh, do I have to? Yeah, there's a lot more honour higher up in companies than people would normally expect.
Yes, I mean, it's very difficult to comment on that kind of thing because we don't really have an accurate idea. But yes, I think in this particular case, it's quite clear that Ansi van Jocke is passionate about Nokia, and he would recognise that having him sitting there with everyone knowing that he's going in sort of 6 months' time, I think his official leaving date is March, and he'll be around there in an advisory capacity, of course, but it makes sense to make that move as quickly as possible and start transitioning to, you know, the new way of doing things, the new regime. And I'm sure any of them would recognise the necessity for that.
And as old friends leave Nokia, it's also a delight to welcome some of those old friends back. The Internet Radio application is now available for touchscreen devices, 5th edition and Symbian 3rd. Steve, it's an old friend and we're glad to see him, aren't we?
We are. So I think what's happened here is that obviously Internet Radio came out for S63rd edition and was a great success. Then 5th edition came along and Nokia kind of thought, well, it's a bit of a palaver to rework the code and just check it all worked. We haven't got the resources. Let's just leave it. No one will miss it. And of course, some of the hardcore users did actually miss it. But nothing was really done until these new Symbian 3 phones came along. The N8 gets launched. It's actually available now. The C7 shipping today, I noticed. We'll come to that later, no doubt. And all of a sudden they think, well, hang on, we've got to have some kind of streaming media solution where things are a bit short on the ground. What about this internet radio application? And they've dusted off the code, got it working now for 5th edition, which presumably must have been not too hard a job. And I'm guessing it's about to appear imminently in the obvious store for the N8 and C7. It's not there yet, I checked earlier on today. But the fact that it's now appeared for the touchscreen devices, and there's nothing intrinsically different with the Symbian 3 phones, I think it's about to appear for the N8 as well. And it's a cracking application. If you haven't tried Nokia Internet Radio, as the name implies, it's access to thousands, I think it's in the order of tens of thousands of different radio stations, music and talk from around the world, categorized into about 20 or 30 different genres. There really is more than you could ever listen in a lifetime. Some of the stations are rather trivial. For example, one of my favorites, Pink Floyd Radio, which, as it sounds, is a Pink Floyd fan playing every Pink Floyd record ever made, more or less in non-stop, 24 hours a day, in a random order. And you tune in and you listen to Pink Floyd. And there are some stations like that which are ultra, ultra specialist. But there are also some decent stations, and it's just fascinating to tune into somewhere being broadcast from you know, from Australia or Brazil, for example, so hopefully in the English language. But fascinating listening. That the interface works really well. It streams in the music in the background. It doesn't use up too much resource.
Third-party applications and what you get your developers to do. And, you know, there's obviously that tension. Developers don't want Nokia or any manufacturer eating all of their lunch. And so, you know, there's always that delicate balance. Sometimes you can do it as in, say, the social networking or the Twitter sphere, where Nokia have got their basic service running on the Symbian 3 devices. But then any pro user would probably like to go after Gravity, which is a paid-for application, you know, as opposed to, you know, free with the device. But the free one with the device isn't going to satisfy anybody. And with sort of services and content, it does change a bit, because obviously partnerships with official companies, as they did, I think, for the FIBA Basketball World Championships, make a lot of sense. But on the whole, I'm always inclined to say it's better to get a third party to do that rather than doing it in-house. And I think that's what the strategy's revolved around. The one exception to that is, I would say, when you're launching a new device or a platform, and this could apply to Symbian or Mego, you know, you reach out to maybe the 50, the 100 biggest developers, so you have that, you know, pool of content, you know, from the beer, the bang, when you launch a platform or a new device. And a good example of how this has been done, I think, is with the 3D games on the N8. You're looking in, obviously, there's about 10 or 12 3D games, and they're being added to all the time from some of the bigger developers like Gameloft, for example, with their Asphalt game, sort of racing game series. And there's others from Fish Labs as well. And that ensures a sort of basic level of content. But after that, that's like priming the pump. After that, it really needs to be down to third-party developers, because that's how it's going to work economically in a sustainable fashion, at least.
And as Ray started, the launch of the new device in the Guinea Meters is the perfect time to seed this thing. And as Steve briefly mentioned there at the top, the next device is all right. The Nokia C7 is shipping today, 28 days after the announcement, far less than the 6 months or so the N8 done. Rafe, the C7 just looked wonderful when we saw it at Nokia World, didn't it? It's small, it's sleek, it's fashionable. And, you know, apart from one or two spec points, it's almost as good as the N8.
Yes, I mean, really, we're talking in terms of spec differences. The camera is the big difference to talk about. It's an EDOF 8 megapixel as opposed to the sort of 12 megapixel one on the N8. And obviously the quality of the sensor, which is what gives the N8 its performance characteristics, is different. I think we may be surprised by the C7's camera performance. We actually need to do some tests on that and find out a bit more about the EDOF technology. It's certainly not the same kind of EDOF module as we saw earlier in the E5, E52, E55, those kind of devices. So it is next generation. So I'm actually expecting it to perform perhaps better than people might be expecting. There's an awful lot you can do in software. But as you perhaps suggested there, what really stood out for me at Nokia World about the C7 was kind of the design and the positioning of it is a little bit cheaper than the N8. And I would say the design is more mass market friendly. It's that little bit, just that little bit smaller, and it fits in the hand slightly better. Not to denigrate the N8, which is a very good device, but I think for me, the C7 just wins on the kind of the design competition, if you like, whereas the N8 is more kind of the ultimate camera phone. The C7 is kind of the all-round everyman phone in the kind of the mold of something like the N73 or the N70 going back a bit further. And, you know, we all know that both of those devices prove to be amongst the most popular ever in terms of Nokia smartphones, and certainly you still see the N73 around. And there's a lot of attention to detail on the C7, which is really impressive, both in terms of things like the build quality, but just little hardware additions. To take one example, they've hidden an additional microphone on the back. It's actually just under where the battery cover clip is, and that gives you active noise cancellation on the upside of outgoing calls, which means if you're in a noisy environment, it's used for noise cancelling, and generally the party at the other end will be able to hear you better. And there are other examples of that, and we'll get into that in our C7 review. But it is impressive to see this come out, 28 days after the announcement. It doesn't really need a genius to work.
You finish your panorama, it then sits there chugging away, stitching up the edges of all the different photos, which takes about a minute or two, and then you have your lovely panorama. The fact that the overlap between the images is quite substantial, you'll note that's why you basically take 9 images as you rotate through 180 degrees, which is quite a lot. The large overlap means that it can do a really, really good job at stitching. Some of the previous panorama apps I've tried have had quite a minimal overlap, and as a result, you can actually see the joins quite easily. If you look at the example I've put up in the one you'll link to in the show notes, it's virtually seamless and really, really impressive. And even more impressively, it works when objects are close to you. It's not just for landscape things quite a long way away. I saw one example photo panorama taken in an alleyway, and it pans around from looking down the alley in one direction through a parked car parked immediately in front of the N8 user, and then right round to look down the other end of the alley, all in one shot with objects close by. And again, it's virtually seamless and terrific software algorithms to put all this together. So kudos to the programmers. There were a few stability issues. I did have the app freeze on me at one point. I think if you really do wobble around too much when taking the panoramas, you can reduce the vertical resolution of the panoramas to the point they become so thin that they're almost unusable. Also, the more wobbling you do and the more vertical movement, the more work the app has to do. And I think at some point it just gives up if you've done a really poor job. So there is a degree of trial and error involved. But I took three or four and had one really usable shot out of it. And I think with a bit of patience, you can produce something quite stunning. And it's free. There were some rumors afoot that once Nokia have perfected it and, you know, rolled out on all the devices and had some more feedback and polished the interface a bit more, that they might start charging a nominal sum for it. We shall see. But in the meantime, all N8 owners and presumably C7 as well, go out and grab it. And let's hope Nokia continue developing it.
I've just wrapped my brains. The company concerned was Bitside, which previously produced a bit of software called Panaman. Though I should point out that the new version has actually been partly developed by the Nokia Research Center Labs and is effectively an open beta rather than a finished version, or at least you should read it that way. So you may be able to improve the quality or the sort of degree of success when you take them. Like Steve, I've been trying this out. I've had success on... done probably five or six now, and had four of them are described as usable, and the other two, one had a major problem, the stitching didn't seem to work quite right. But compared to the other ones, one of the things I like about this is it's not just the guide, you can actually use the photo being taken, and if you look, there's kind of a ghostly image overlaid one on top of the other as you're taking it, and personally I found it easier to use that. But it does depend on how many features you've got in your photograph. In something like a cityscape, it's quite easy because you can sort of overlay the skyline as from where it was to where it is now, if you see what I mean. But for sort of more close-up shots or for, you know, landscapes that look similar, it's perhaps harder to do. But yeah, it's nice to see this available as free, although it's, you know, something that's commonly available on camera phones. You know, with the N8's camera, you can probably produce a panorama or rather superior quality. Although, as Steve suggested there, you know, you're not talking really big pixel resolution, but of course, as soon as you start going up to the native resolution of, you know, 2,000 or 3,000, that would, you know, dramatically increase the amount of time that would need to be spent on stitching. So, you know, with 1,000, you were getting a panorama, I guess, about 30 seconds or so, which is pretty impressive in terms of the amount of processing that's going on. And, you know, it's a fun toy to play with, nice addition to the N8's image capture functionality.
Indeed. I remember back in the days when we had 640 by 480 VGA and we were thankful.
Yeah, that was a 7650.
Indeed, yes. But we're slightly bigger than VGA now, and the main selling point that Nokia's been pushing on the N8, as well as the new interface and the applications and all sorts of stuff, the one that everybody's picking out, quite obviously, is the camera. Now, Steve is our resident camera expert, and I know you've been out there doing hundreds of shots, Steve, and using strange terms like EDOF, f-stops, brightness.
Overall, you certainly can't fault the camera, and anyone who misses that particular unique selling point, I think, is missing a trick. I heard a mini review on another podcast, which I won't mention this morning, and they basically said, yeah, I tried the N8, the web browser was rubbish, you know, same old Symbian, and they just left it at that. They didn't even mention the camera, which I think is like reviewing a Ferrari, but saying, not talking about the engine, which is just silly. So all in all, very, very impressed.
How about in day-to-day use? How fast is it, say, from hitting the camera shutter button when you're in another application to being able to get up, take that picture? You know, can you be instantaneous with it? Is there still, like, you know, you need to think 2 or 3 seconds ahead to make sure you got the camera ready for a shot? What's it like using?
Yes and no, if that makes sense, because although when you press the shutter button to launch the camera, you're talking of the usual 2 or 3 seconds. I mean, those 2 or 3 seconds are used to actually physically launch the program, to assign the memory, to get the electronics powered up. And if the flash is going to be used, then the flash will need to be powered up as well. So you can kind of excuse those 2 or 3 seconds. But once its camera is running, it is unbelievably fast. You can think, okay, I'm viewing things on the viewfinder. I want to snap that. Normally on a camera phone, even the best camera phones, you'd half press the shutter. It would take, half a second to focus, maybe a second, and then you'd snap it, and then it would take it. Then you'd be waiting. 3 or 4 seconds later, you'd see the preview. Okay, you press the shutter button again. back. And the shot-to-shot time typically on most camera phones is around 6 to 7 seconds. On the N8, you half-press the shutter and the focusing is as near instant as you can possibly measure. In sunlight, it is instant, effectively. In poor conditions, it can go down to about half a second, but it's still far, far faster than anything else I've used. And also, the 12, with the help of the GPU inside the phone, the photos you've taken, they come up within a second, and then so you press the shutter and you're back in action. So shot-to-shot times in good light can be as short as 1 second, even with the image preview turned on, and in poor light maybe 2 seconds. But again, it's a whole leap ahead of anything else we've seen on the Symbian platform before. But so very, very fast once you've actually got the camera up and running.
So staying with that day-to-day use, Rafe, you've had the second review that we've got a hold of, and I know a lot of people have been asking about battery life, and you said initially that you needed to give it a little bit longer. Are you in a position yet to answer that battery life question, or make a sort of educated guess at where it is?
I think I'll make an educated guess, because I haven't done sort of any formal testing on this, but I've been away speaking at a conference in Finland the sort of second half of last week, and the N8 was my mainstay device. And what really impressed me more than anything else was the battery life, and I've actually seen this repeated by other people who have, you know, been using the N8. It comfortably gets through a day, even with quite heavy usage. For example, you know, one of the days I was traveling for sort of 8 hours, and, you know, on the plane I watched probably an hour and a half of an hour of video, you know, some music while I was at the airport waiting for the plane. Inevitably, quite a long time I was on the web, had a few phone calls come in, and similarly once I got there. So, you know, much heavier use than I typically put a phone through in a day. And the battery life lasted absolutely fine. It was only, as I was, you know, going to bed, it was down to about 1 bar, but that was under, you know, exceptional usage conditions. I think under your sort of average usage conditions, most people are going to get a day and a half out, and maybe even 2 days if you're a light user. And it's a dramatic improvement over, say, something like the N97 Mini. It doesn't quite measure up to something like the E72, but that's hardly any surprise given the difference in the battery size, you know, 1500 in the E72 versus 1200, I think it is, in the N8. But I was really pleasantly surprised. It's, I think, being one of the biggest thing, you know, that you can't judge before seeing the device is the battery life. I don't know whether Steve's had any similar thoughts on this,
absolutely.
But certainly the battery life has impressed me.
Yeah, I took it out for an event on Saturday where we were out all day. I was on gravity the whole day. I did a amount of email as well. We took about a dozen photos.
You know, see how that lasts through a couple more recharge cycles, and, you know, a bit more practical usage. And we're trying to do some formal testing of that as well.
There we go. Now, the other thing that people probably pick up do straight away is they're going to look at the built-in applications. Let's look specifically at the web browser. I mean, we know that there is a new web browser coming out, but at the moment, people buying the N8 and also people who are buying the C7 are going to have the stock web browser on the platform. Steve, I mean, is this going to be the Achilles heel of the N8? Is the web browser been improved enough that you can still put it next to the mobile Safari and the Android web browser and it will still be competent?
It very much depends what you want to browse. The casual user will simply tap in, for example, bbc.co.uk or cnn.com or one of hundreds of other websites which have competent mobile versions. And they'll, as with every other S65th edition device, they'll get a perfectly reasonable, well laid out page that they can kinetically scroll around, and they'll be as happy as Larry. The moment you start wanting to be a real geek, a hardcore user, and say, oh, no, I want the full version of allaboutsymbian.com. I want the full version of, you know, engadgetmobile.com, and you start wanting all the bells and whistles, then the browser does struggle a bit. And just with the things like the N97, it does slow down somewhat. It is better than all those devices because it's got far more RAM, a faster processor, and more efficiency under the hood. And you've got multi-touch if you want to play with the multi-touch as well. It is a tiny bit clunky once you start really pushing it, and I for one, can't wait for the new browser, which is promised to be faster, sleeker, smoother in every way, and I'm really looking forward to that. I don't think this is going to be an Achilles heel for the N8, though. I think that's overstating the case.
Yeah, I'd agree with Steve. I mean, just to put the technical details, it's the 7.2 version of the browser, and it's still on WebKit 5.2.5. The sort of browser upgrade we can probably expect to see in the first major firmware upgrade for the N8, which I would anticipate will be out before the end of the year. I think December probably rather than November, but it is on the way. as Steve suggested there, the mobile browsing is very good indeed. I'd suggest that actually this browser remains probably the best for just pure mobile sites compared to anything out there. It's very quick indeed at loading small pages, and on the larger pages it does tend to suffer a bit. But you are able to get the kind of the full web experience, and you do get the flash videos and things like that. And I found, I haven't, you know, come across what you used to get on some of the older devices, you know, the out of memory messages. I haven't seen that at all. It's just that when it's doing a 2 or 3 megabyte page download, which you do get on some of the larger sites, it can be a little bit slow. And I would say, you know, the problems are perhaps less around rendering and more around some of the, not clunkiness exactly in the UI, but, you know, this is a UI that has changed precious little since, you know, it was developed 5 years ago with the, you know, when this browser first came out on the 63rd edition Feature Pack 2. But to just give you two examples, it's really about, you know, there's no reflowing of text when you zoom in and out, which means the zoom functionality doesn't work perhaps as smoothly as you might like it to. The actual zooming itself generally works pretty well. And I like the fact you can either do it with the volume keys, you can do it with multi-tap, or you can do it using on-screen controls. But it just needs a little bit of work there. But for example, when you're loading the page, it automatically goes into full screen mode, which is something I do like. But I don't actually think it should go into that full screen mode until the page has really finished loading, or at least you should still have the loading bar at the top of the page. Because, you know, when it goes into full screen mode, a lot of people think, it's finished loading, I can scroll around the page. But a lot of the time, it's actually still loading in the background, and therefore sort of scrolling around the page can be a bit sluggish. Now, this is a problem you get on all mobile browsers, but it's just that kind of tightening up of the UI I'd like to see. And I guess another example of that might be in history, where you go back a page, it actually reloads the page in its entirety, which can take a bit of time. And I don't see why it shouldn't be possible to maybe do some kind of caching, so when you go back at least one page, it's able to do that much more quickly, rather than, you know, having to go through the loading process again. But as Steve says, I don't think this is an Achilles heel. It's certainly a weak...
See all of them together, all in one view, or just my wife's, or just the PC suite. And you can basically mix and match. So it's very, very flexible. It can be a tiny bit off-putting to see sort of multiple entries and what appear to be duplicates. But they're only duplicates if they happen to also be on your other devices. And you can just say, okay, look, just show me the ones on that are synchronized between the Mac and the phone. And that's the simplest way of looking at it. And that is the default. So by default, you just see everything just syncs perfectly. No duplicates, no issues. You just see what you see, and then you can mess around with private entries and other phones if you really want to. But all in all, a big thumbs up again.
So fun. Does anybody want to give the N8 back? Yeah, or are you both still quite happy with it?
Hands off. No, right. over my dead body.
I think I feel I need a little more time to assess it fully. So no, I don't want to hand it back either just yet.
I need another couple of years.
Thinking back to when you picked up the N95 for the first time, are your feelings of the N8 now about the same or stronger now, you know, compared to what it was like after a week of using the N95?
Oh, now that's a tricky question. I think the thing about the N95, it was something of a singular device launching into a vacuum, and it, you know, there was a lot of technology on there that was completely groundbreaking, hadn't been seen before. With the N8, that isn't so true, but you have to understand that in the context of the competitive environment it's in, you know, the industry has changed, it's moved on, and so there is likely to be less of these really revolutionary devices. Now, that said, you know, the N8 still has some pretty impressive stuff. The camera phone, or the camera in it, is revolutionary. You know, it's the first time we've seen anything like this on a, you know, a smartphone device. And equally, well, you can look at PentaBand, which in itself is a very impressive technical innovation. You know, even USB on the go, you know, not maybe quite so core and centric, but it is important. You know, the integration of the Office services is much better on the N8 than it ever was on the N95. You know, the maps in the first version of the N95 was practically unusable, and I think that's a big difference. You know, the N8 is a lot more stable in software terms. But does it have quite the same wow factor? No, perhaps not. But as I say, a lot of that's down to the competitive environment, the way the industry has changed. What I would say about the N8 is it is a big step up. And so for me, it's one of the most exciting of the recent smartphone and the Symbian device launches of recent time. A lot of that is about the platform. But, you know, the N8 also has some really, really nice hardware in it. But, you know, the big changes come as much from the hardware families that's being used and the platform that goes with it as the single device itself. So perhaps not the same kind of wow factor excitement, but nevertheless, the N8's a very important device. And, you know, for my money, I'd look back to devices, I don't know, maybe like the E71 and the N95 were similarly interesting for me, and to a certain extent maybe the 5800 is the first touch device, which in the end perhaps wasn't such a letdown. But the N8, you know, does step things up and is, you know, competitive with other touch devices on the market. So in that sense, very important indeed.
This is the first Symbian phone that I can hold up next to the best of Android and the best of iPhone and say with my hand on my heart, yes, this, all, if you take all the pros and cons into consideration, this can hold its head up high in that company and arguably win out at the end of the day. Most of the previous phones I've been trying that with, things like the Samsung i9910, which, as you know, I loved, but that was with all the caveats to do with custom firmware, and even then it just about matched up, you know, blow for blow with the best of Android, for example. But the N8, I think, despite the caveats we have already mentioned, there are so many pros and so many innovations and so many positives that I think, yes, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to doing some more of our comparisons on All About Symbian and put it head-to-head with some of these devices just so that people can get a sense for how it matches up with the competition.
So there we go there. We're going to call the podcast there, as it were. We've been running for a fair amount of time. Still lots to discuss. You're always welcome to leave your comments back on the website, www.allaboutsymbian.com, either under the news post for the Insight podcast or in any article that catches your mind. Rafe, you were at the Unnamed Finnish conference this week, in the same week that Finland announced the finalists for their entry for Eurovision next year, so we all know what Rafe was up to. Steve was sitting at home watching The X Factor, and I'm preparing to fly over to Las Vegas for the Blog World Expo conference this Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. If you see me there, do pop over and say hi. Always nice to meet the readers and the listeners. All that remains for me, Ewan Spence, to say thank you to my co-hosts, as always, on the All About Symbian Insight podcast. That's Rafe Blanford.
Goodbye, everyone. And if you want to know what I was doing, go and visit mindtrek.org, where my presentation should be available shortly. It was a sort of Finnish tech social media conference. I had a great time. And thank you to everyone who was welcoming in Tampere in particular. It was a great city to visit, and I look forward to visiting perhaps on holiday again sometime soon.
There we go. And I thought he was doing the Eurovision, making sure the automatic eye got through the first semi-final. Also, thank you to Steve Litchfield.
Yes, and this comes at the end of a steady 3.5 hours of podcast recording. If you want to see hear my dulcet tones in more podcasts, have a look at stevelitchfield.com later today.
Anything to make
show,
sure.
Great show. Go and listen to it.
Anything Steve wants to do to make sure he doesn't get deported, that's fine by me. And you can find me, as always, www.ewanspence.com. Various stuff going on in there, including the weekly rock music podcast and other fun and jolly japes. But for now, allaboutsymbian.com is where you'll find us throughout the days. And for time to say goodbye.